He said, I will forget the dying faces, the empty places. They shall be filled again. O voices moaning deep within me, cease. But vain the word, vain, vain. Not in forgetting lieth peace. He said, I will crowd action upon action. The strife of faction shall stir me and sustain. O tears that drown the fire of manhood, cease. But vain the word, vain, vain. Not in endeavor lieth peace. He said, I will withdraw me and be quiet. Why meddle in life's riot? Shut be my door to pain. Desire thou dost befool me, thou shalt cease. But vain the word, vain, vain. Not in aloofness lieth peace. He said, I will submit, I am defeated. God hath depleted my life of its rich gain. O futile murmurings, why will ye not cease? But vain the word, vain, vain, not in submission lieth peace. He said, I will accept the breaking sorrow, which God tomorrow will to his son explain. Then did the turmoil deep within me cease. Not vain the word, not vain, for in acceptance lieth peace. For some reason, earlier this week, this phrase was going through my mind. In acceptance lieth peace. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with this poem I just read. How many are? Just out of curiosity. A few of yous. Probably read it sometime in my life, not sure when. But the title was sticking in my mind and meditated on it throughout the week. Finally looked up to try to see where this is coming from and found this poem by Amy Carmichael, who was the author of this poem. Who was she? Well, maybe before that, I want to give you all a hearty welcome to Leola this morning. Friends, family, visitors, church family, regular attendees. Pray that the name of Jesus would be here and be in our midst as we worship together. I did want to make mention, too, that I'm glad to see Lenita Martin here with us again, out of the hospital. Good to see you back. Glad that there was healing there. Back to Amy Carmichael. This is a book that was written about her from the back cover. It says this: Amy Carmichael understood true discipleship and lived it out. At a very young age, she felt called to the mission field, followed God's guidance, and eventually went to India, where she would spend 53 years without furlough. While there, she founded the Donavar Fellowship, a refuge for children in moral danger, children who were orphaned or unwanted and to be sold to the temple. She became a mother for these children. They called her Emma. How did she know that in acceptance lieth peace? What did she know about this subject? Well, this poem was written sometime after a broken leg, I believe it was, that had left her bedridden and in great pain and difficulty for the rest of her life. But prior to all this, she gave up what was apparently somewhat comfortable life in England and wanted to go out in the mission field, and there was some kind of few changes in her plans until she felt compelled to go to India at the age of 28 and served there unmarried until her death. And like I said, this poem was written right after she had, sometime after she had broken her leg and was bedridden and in difficulty for the rest of her life. And in that context, she wrote this poem, In Acceptance Lieth Peace. Peace, a state of being that is so much desired by so many, and yet so many attain thereto, never attain thereto. The search for it, the search for peace, the search for inner peace, the search for global peace is so elusive. Why? Prophet Jeremiah spoke of a time when there would be a cry made for peace, peace, but followed it up with the mournful declaration that there was no peace to be found. The prophet Isaiah remonstrated with King Hezekiah after he had showed off all of the great things in his temple or in his palace to the king of Babylon, and he said those things are going to end up going to the king of Babylon eventually. Does anyone remember what King Hezekiah's reply was to that? Anybody quote it? Is it not good if peace and truth be in my days? He wanted peace and truth to be in his day. Going to a little bit more modern history, World War I was infamously dubbed the war to end all wars. How did that work out? Those of you that enjoy a little bit of history, how did that work out? Well, following the end of the war, there was a British staff officer that was heard to remark that after the war to end war, they went to Paris and made a peace to end peace. And that turned out to be correct, because before long we had World War II starting up again. But early, just before that, the British Prime Minister Chamberlain met with Hitler and came home and pronounced that there is going to be peace in our day, peace in our time. He told the Britons to go home and sleep in your beds tonight because there's going to be peace. Well, again, that was, again, sadly not the case. The story of mankind is one of warfare and conflict and bloodshed and strife, not peace, although there have been periods intermingled in peace during those times. Forgot to mention that the title is just simply the same as the poem, "In Acceptance Lieth Peace," is the title of the message. But the cry of many individuals and governments has been for peace. And yet, war and violence continue unabated, as if it were to go on forever. And I believe there's a time coming when that will cease. Where is peace? Where is peace? Well, that's the world around us and the history behind us. What about you? What about me? Have you found peace? Have you found the peace that passeth understanding? Turn with me to Isaiah chapter 55. We've been in and out of this book several times this morning, and I want to say that Brother Reynolds and I did not have our heads together here before the start of the service, so I had to smile when he started sharing this morning. I thought, well, this is right down the same line as what I was planning to share here this morning. "In acceptance lieth peace," Isaiah 55. I'd like to start reading in verse 6. "Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call ye upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. For as the rain cometh down, and the snow from heaven, and returneth not thither, but watereth the earth, and maketh it bring forth and bud, that it may give seed to the sower, and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void or empty, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereto I sent it. For ye shall go out with joy, and be led forth with peace. The mountains and the hills shall break forth before you into singing, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands. Instead of the thorn shall come up the fir tree, and instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree. Now it shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off." What a beautiful picture of peace this passage ends with. Anybody ever see mountains and hills singing? How about trees clapping their hands? But that's the picture that's given here. It's a picture of ultimate peace. I believe it's pointing to forward to a time in the future. Instead of the thorn, you're going to have a fir tree. Who likes thorns? None of us do. Instead of the briar is the myrtle tree. And I didn't go into a study of what those trees all necessarily represent and how much more of a blessing they are than what they replace. But none of us likes briars and thorns. When they get in our way, we cut them down. We get rid of them. But what a beautiful picture this would be if this were a reality today, were it not? That this beautiful message of peace and thoughts of peace. I just killed your Bibles open there because we're going to come back to this in a little bit. But I'd like to go back to the poem I opened up with. And Amy Carmichael, the author of this poem, mentions four things that we try to do to find peace. And I'd like to just look briefly at each one of these four things. So the first point here is man's feeble attempts to find peace. And then we're going to look at these four things. You know, we live in a world that is being destroyed by sin and wickedness. And strife and warfare and murder is all a part of and or a result of that. And we're told in Scripture this is to be expected. 2 Timothy 3:13 says, but evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. This is the progression of time. Painful things can and will happen to us. No one within the sound of my voice this morning is exempt from that reality. Brother Reynolds talked about that this morning on the Sunday school devotional. You know, there's loved ones that we lose. Could be parents, could be a close friend, could be a sibling, could be, and there's, you fill in the blanks, and there's probably not a lot of homes here, not a lot of people here this morning that have not been touched by this in some way. Grief. There's financial loss that happens. Very successful people, very wealthy people can face ruin, utter ruin. Loss of a close friend, you know, as in a friend that leaves you and suddenly wants to nothing more to do with you. You fit that where it, you put that where it fits in your life. But those painful things happen to all of us. Difficult things. It's a reality of our world. And we must not forget that we ourselves are prone to cause pain and hurt, and we are prone to sin in our own lives. And so we face these difficult things. What do we do with them? How do we respond? Well, the first section of this poem is about, she mentions forgetting. I'll just forget the dying faces. The grief of those that have passed on, just block it out. I'll forget it. And I'm not sure what all she means through some of these verses. The empty places, is that people that have left, deserted her? I'm not sure. But she says forgetting is the one thing we try. How many of you have ever done that? You don't need to put your hands up. Because I think if we're all honest, we'd probably all put our hands up, wouldn't we? But there's things that we have tried to do to just block it out. Just forget it. Forget it, move on. Ignore the bad things. Pretend they don't exist. Kind of play this mental game inside our minds that, you know, it's not there. It's not really real. I'm just going to forget it. We're just going to move on. Those of you that have tried it, how did it work? Did it work? I think we all recognize that for a time it does. It does sort of. But pain and sin that is just simply shoved aside and ignored will not remain that way. I believe God and His Spirit and our conscience will not let it remain so. That eventually, we're going to have to face those things. It's simply forgetting is not the answer. Proverbs 28:13 says, "He that covereth his sins shall not prosper, but whoso confesseth and forsaketh them shall have mercy." And I just appreciate the blessing that's pronounced at the end of that, and the promise, "Thou shalt have mercy." There's no question about that. Forgetting is not the answer. Not in forgetting lieth peace. What's the other thing we try? Get busy. Just run till you're ragged. Fill your life with things. Work. Many things. Music, hobbies, travel, entertainment, jobs, whatever it is. You know what it is in your life. What is it you want to fill your life with so that at the end of the day you're so tired that you just can fall in your bed and go to sleep and just ignore the pain, ignore the hurt, ignore the sin that's there. Fill my life. I will crowd action upon action. The strife of faction. Some people respond by causing strife. That, she says here, the strife of faction, that's going to stir me and sustain. It's all part of just trying to just fill it with stuff and motion, but it's not fixing the problem. We're not made to live like that. We're not made to live like that. I think God in his wisdom knew that we have a tendency to do that, and so he placed deliberately a day of rest into our schedule. 1 out of 7 days, and I'm not here this morning to say which day it is, that's a different conversation, but 1 day out of 7 that we rest. We lay these things aside. We stop our work. We stop thinking about work. And even to a point, lay some hobbies aside. I'm not saying all hobbies are wrong on Sundays. But what do we fill our Sundays with? God gave us a day of rest. No, not in endeavor or busy schedules lies peace. That doesn't work either. The third thing we try is aloofness. I will withdraw me and be quiet. Shut be my door to pain. Somewhat similar to the forgetting thing, but it's here we're still recognizing, but we're just going to disconnect. Disconnect and withdraw. Have you ever seen anybody do that? More importantly, have you ever done that? Dealing with hurtful things, hard things, difficult things, we just want to disconnect. Disconnect from each other. But you know what always goes along with that? It's a disconnect from God, too. Because I do not believe that both these things can be mutual, or that the opposite of these can be mutual, that we disconnect with each other, with our church family or with our own family, but we still stay connected to God. I don't believe that's possible. If we're connected to God, we're going to be connected with each other. But we stop talking, we stop sharing, we stop encouraging, we stop blessing, we stop building each other up. We just disconnect. Not in aloofness lieth peace. The fourth thing, submission. And I stopped at this one a little bit because I do believe submission is a key part of Christianity. It's a key part of peace. But I think in the context here, she is saying, admitting defeat, okay? Personal defeat. In other words, I just give up. I can't do it. I stop trying. I assume everything is bad, or if not, it soon will be bad. Everyone has left me down. And of course, eventually, God has also left me down, is what comes right along on the heels of that. And it ends up with discouragement, depression, and despair. True peace is not found in defeat. Probably a better word than submission. And again, I ask the question, who of us have not tried some or all of these things at various points in our lives? And there's other ways that this comes out. It can come out in anger, is another way. But thankfully, this poem did not stop after the fourth verse. He said, "I will accept the breaking sorrow which God tomorrow will to his son explain. And that son is not capitalized. I think it's written, he's speaking of himself. Then did the turmoil deep within me cease, not vain the word, not vain for an acceptance lieth peace. I'd like to spend the rest of the message simply looking at acceptance as the pathway to peace. So what is the answer to this, to these difficult things, to these hard things? After we've tried all these and come to the end of ourselves, then what is the answer? Must we try each one of these four or more things to find acceptance, to find peace? Are we doomed to live out the existence of our lives jumping from one to the other, from defeat to forgetting to motion and activity? Or is there something else that we're missing? Well, that answer again is in acceptance. The answer lies in acceptance. In acceptance of what? Acceptance of what? I believe it's an acceptance of God's sovereignty over all things. And how does acceptance happen? You know, it'd be so nice. I wish I could push a button and make it happen. So we like that, don't we? We like easy fixes. We just push buttons and get the results. We like that way. We like it that way. But it doesn't work that way. Acceptance of difficult things, of hard things, of painful things does not come easy. And it's not fixed in one simple motion. How is it acceptance accomplished? Well, number one, I believe it's a simple faith in God. Hebrews 11:6, for he that cometh to God must what? Believe that he is. And that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. It's where it all starts. None of this makes sense outside of God. Has mankind crawled out of the primordial slime millions of years ago and slowly evolved from a fish-like creature into an ape-like creature and then into the what we are today? Is that what we believe? I don't believe I'm speaking to a single person that believes that. Or that all happened by random chance. I believe I'm speaking to a group of people that accepts that God created you and you didn't evolve over a period of millions of years by total random chance. But we were created by a supernatural being that loves us and cares for us. Are we humans simply eking out an existence on this earth for our own pleasure in this life only? Is that what life is about? Or did that same wise and loving Creator place you here for a purpose? A purpose of his. And I believe if we follow that purpose of his, we can then experience the joy and bliss of the eternal reward that is promised in Hebrews 11:6. He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. And I believe there is a reward present today, and there is a reward future. But these are essentially the two, can I say, main faith concepts in our world. We either accept that God is who he says he is, or we have to accept that we're here just by total random chance. Which one gives you more confidence and more stability and more courage to face the future? Which faith are you? Is God who he said he was, who he said he is? But again, I believe I'm speaking to a group of people that has accepted that, God is who he says he is. He is the King of kings and Lord of lords. Today, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Number two, the acceptance of God's sovereignty. And I already mentioned that earlier. Psalm 139, you can turn to this one. For thou, verse 13, for thou hast possessed my reins, thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. My substance was not hid from thee, when I was made in secret, and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect. And in thy book all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned when as yet there was none of them. How precious also are thy thoughts unto me, O God! How great is the sum of them! If I should count them, they are more in number than the sand. When I awake, I am still with thee. God's sovereignty. God made you specifically, intentionally, carefully, with a purpose. And Isaiah also brings this out in the verses 8 and 9. My thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways. And I'd like to think about that in context with our creation. We look at ourselves sometimes and wonder why God made me the way he did. Or you ask yourself that question. But I believe that God, this supernatural God, created us for a purpose with love because he had a plan for us. He had a future for us. He had a reason for us to be here. And he loves us even though we are most unworthy of his love. What is the mileage from earth to heaven? Anybody ever try to measure that? Says in Isaiah 55, verse 9, for as the heavens are higher than the earth. How much higher is that? I don't know that number. So I don't think any human knows that number. But if God's ways and God's thoughts are that much higher than ours, what a wonderful God we serve. And this same God superintends the events and affairs of our life. I believe that. And I believe that to the Christian, this is a tremendous source of comfort and is one of the keys to acceptance of the difficult things that life brings to us. Is it possible that this supernatural, awesome, mighty God, whose thoughts are way higher than ours, whose ways are way higher than ours, would actually allow painful things in our life for our own good? Is that possible? Again, I don't believe that. I'm speaking to a group here that questions the creation story, that God created the world by speaking it into existence. And I believe we all accept by faith too that God's hand was present in our creation as well. That God had a plan for us. But when that gets difficult is when we face difficult things, when we face hard things. When we face death or death of a loved one or financial hardship or loss of health. Is that still the same loving God that I used to think he was? And why do we limit God so? If we cannot accept that God allows hard things in our life, is that not a form of unbelief? Romans 8:28, we know that all things work together for good. All things. Do we really believe that? To all things. Think back over your life. And I know none of you have lived a have had a perfect life, that all of you, without knowing the individual stories, all of you have faced pain and difficulty in your life somewhere. All things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. I want to challenge us with that thought this morning, that those things work together for good, that we accept that in God's sovereignty, he saw a need for that in our lives. But if we go down the forgetting road, if we go down the work road, if we go down the aloofness road or the defeated road, we're not going to be able to accept that those things have worked together for good, but it's only in acceptance of God's sovereignty over the affairs of our life that we find peace. Number three, acceptance of our sinful world. We live in a sinful world. I don't need to tell you that. And in a broken, sinful world, bad things will happen. And it's easy for me to say this, I know, from the comfort of and security of Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, 2024. As we look across the globe of our world today and look at the destruction and war and damaged buildings and people and lives and emotions in many parts of the world, we recognize, even though we are too much disconnected from it in a real way, not asking for those things to happen, but we recognize that there is trouble in a broken, sinful world. Job said, "Man that is born of a woman is a few days and full of trouble." He recognized that in his day. Acceptance of our sinful world. Peace is not the absence of conflict. You know, there's many calls in Scripture to fight the good fight of faith. Doesn't sound very peaceful, does it? But peace is not the absence of conflict, but it's the inner peace that comes to us as we face conflict, as we face broken things, as we face sinful things. It's an inner peace that's an acceptance that is the world we live in. Another key to finding peace. And then the fourth one is simply the acceptance of the imperfection of mankind. Romans 3:23, "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." That includes every single one of us here. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. We live with imperfect people. A quote of mine that has been a favorite for me for years, and I had been attributing this to George Washington, and I went searching for this to find it, and I couldn't find the quote at all, so I'm not sure where I got this from. But it's one to consider. "Since we cannot have mankind as we wish, we have to take them as they are." Somewhere I thought that was attributed to George Washington. Like I said, I could not find any verification of that, but I think there's a lot of truth in that. "Since we cannot have mankind as we wish, we have to take them as they are. I cannot change you. You're probably going to have limited success in changing me." Now, there is also the side of this where in Christianity, as we walk the pilgrim's pathway together, we do try to help each other. We do try to encourage each other. We do try to build each other up. We don't just take each other as we are. We do, but we try to inspire greater good, but yet there's still a sense we have to come back to that God created us different, and God created us unique. God created you different than me. And since we cannot have each other sometimes as we wish, we have to take them as they are. And I had to think of that, the direction given to husband and wife, it says to dwell with them according to knowledge. And that's directed in the marriage relationship, but you know, it's really true in all of our relationships, is it not? To dwell with them. Okay, maybe we don't live together right in the same house, but we relate to each other, we live together, we live in the same area, we live in the same community, we go to church together. We live with each other according to knowledge as best we can. So what do we do with these four things? The faith in God, the acceptance of our sinful world, the acceptance of the imperfection of mankind, the sovereignty of God. What does all that mean for me, for you today? Back to Isaiah 55 and verse 6. Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call ye upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. Seek ye the Lord, call upon him, draw close to God. That's where acceptance is found. As we consider who God is, his majesty, his omnipotence, his ability to be every place, anytime, his ability to do everything, anything, far above what we ask or think, draw close to this God and let him direct your life and allow him to change you through the difficult things. Psalm 119, 165, great peace have they which love thy law, and nothing shall offend them. And I believe it was Amy Carmichael's closeness to God that enabled her to write this poem, to live this out in her own life, to find peace by accepting God's plan for her life, no matter what difficulties it brought to her. You know, there's a word that we don't hear or use much anymore that is kind of the essence of this thought of acceptance, life, peace, and that is the word Gelassenheit. It's an old German word, and there's no English word that it really translates into, and some historians for sure have come across this. Putting it in my own words, it is a mutual yieldedness to the will of God, no matter what it entails. And our Anabaptists, to the Anabaptists, this meant suffering. That's how they viewed this concept, that meant to be yielded, mutually yielded to God's will. It was going to mean suffering. When you signed up and said, yes, I'm a follower of Jesus, it meant suffering. What does it mean to us today? What does it mean to us today? I pulled out my Mennonite Encyclopedia and was reading what it had to say on this subject of Gelassenheit. And this was the closing paragraph, and it struck me. Present-day Mennonitism has lost the idea of Gelassenheit nearly completely. Yet with the recovery of the ideal of discipleship, all Gelassenheit may be revived. Is that true? Now this was written back in the mid-1900s, I think, when the Mennonite Encyclopedia was put together. But they said, the writers there believed it has been pretty much lost. I don't know how to answer that question, if it has or if it hasn't. I'll just leave that for you to ponder and think over. Where is this expressed in your life and mine? Closing verse, Isaiah 26, 3 and 4. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. Trust ye in the Lord forever, for in the Lord Jehovah is everlasting strength. May that be our testimony this morning. Let's kneel for prayer.